Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, back in the rugby dungeon. And if only we could continue the conversation we were just having.
We should do them.
Sometime. Do you know what? We'll do a Patreon pod.
Yes,
we will do that. It just wouldn't be fair to continue that conversation here and now.
It was a bit cruel.
Anyway.
And self-aggrandising.
How you doing,
very,
Phil?
Hello, Tim. Hello. Very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. Well, no, actually, I'm a bit ropey, I'll be perfectly honest. More on that in a bit. Well, just, you know, when it's a sunny, lovely sunny afternoon and just a few beers and you can, you go for a nap and you wake up, you can either feel refreshed and bang on that or you feel really groggy, and I'm the latter. JB, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
In your CrossFit gear, I see.
I'm never out of it. I'm always CrossFitting. Pre-crossfitting or post-crossfitting, so it's very hard to know when not to wear it.
You're either in CrossFit gear or
a jacket,
salmon chinos and a jacket.
Yeah,
there's not much in between.
The sad thing is, there's less and less salmon chino wearing at the moment. Next week there'll be lots of salmon chino wearing.
Next weekend, definitely.
Oh, goodness me.
Right, thank you very much for listening. Obviously, we're going to be talking about the European quarterfinals, some epic games. There's other stuff going on in the world of rugby that we'll want to get into, grassroots stuff too. And thank you for listening. And if you haven't already, please hit subscribe. We're hoping we earn that subscription today. For one, it just means this gets downloaded automatically to you every single episode, and it helps. So does leaving a 5-star review, and so does going to patreon.com/eggchasers, where we do give you extra content, and we will have to... Yeah, we will have to do that, and again, maybe
we'll do it today.
Maybe, yes.
We'll do it today.
Definitely.
And we'll talk about. I know what we're going to talk about. We'll talk about what we were talking about before.
We'll see. But yeah, thank you very much for your support and for your ears. We are nearly completing our 10th season, nearly completing 10 years of doing this podcast every single Monday morning, and it wouldn't happen. Well, actually, I was going to say it wouldn't happen if you weren't listening, but we'd probably still be jabbering away.
Yeah, we would.
Yeah.
We'd have had fewer amazing experiences, though, like when we've travelled around the world, meeting fans, which hopefully we'll do some more of this year.
Correct.
Well. Exactly, Phil.
Correct.
I was with some guys meeting some fans on Friday night.
Were you?
Although they weren't my fans. not even slightly. They were James Haskell's fans.
You were going to support some of the lower tier podcasts.
I did, yeah. It's nice to go and support grassroots podcasts. To be fair, Sam, it was Bridgewater Hall, and they were bloody good. They were bloody good. So yeah, really, really good, well organised night. Got to say hello to the Hask and his Royal Highness. Lord or King Tyndall.
Yeah.
Who's still playing? By the way, this is my favourite.
He plays for, hold on, I know this, because he plays for that team that's in Gloucestershire, near Stroud, near where my friend, Minching Hampton.
Mm-hmm. So here's my favourite bit of information that I got from this whole experience. I mean, there's lots of stories which I tell, and you'll have to go to their show to listen to stories, so I shan't repeat them. But you'd imagine, wouldn't you, that a man like Mr. Tyndall has got a lot of opportunities laid out before him, with professional rugby clubs, ambassador roles, directorships, obviously the royalty stuff. He's got a lot of stuff going on. Why is he not doing something as an ambassador or something like that with a rugby club? because he still enjoys playing on a Saturday.
Good lad.
I have nothing.
Level 10. Level 10, I think he plays.
Does not matter.
No, no, no. I'm not knocking it. I'm saying just how awesome that he still plays.
That is class. The number of people at that level who now have played with and against a World Cup winner.
Yes, yeah, awesome.
It is amazing.
Well, funnily enough, I was thinking, well, next time we see West Park St Helens and they play Morris Farsavalua, I just call up Tindall. Because he plays 12. The other guy plays 12. That is the natural matchup.
You're not going to stick yourself at 12 next time?
No, no.
Get Tins in, your man.
Yeah, I sized that up, and the answer is no.
So, Tim, this weekend, as well as obviously your nap this afternoon,
which was post a Raffy Quirk's Broughton Park under-14s presentation afternoon. We got all the parents together for a little bit of a lark about the rugby, then a presentations, a few beers. That's where the beers were. So, and Raffy Quirk, good on him, sent the boys a little video message as well.
Awesome.
On our WhatsApp group, which is... Yeah,
good lad.
He's a good lad.
So yeah, other than that,
that
ceremony, you had the best seats in the house the most exhilarating spectacle of the whole weekend. So how was Ed Sheeran?
Hey! Do you know you're not lying, actually, and it was one of those times where I've said this a few times lately, where I pinch myself and I don't take it for granted how lucky I am to get to do some of the stuff I do, and sitting on the halfway line, front row seats for that in the Aviva Stadium was just out of this world. And I'll tell you how good it was. I was stood behind the Munster players as the penalty shootout was happening, and they were all linking arms, and I took a photo, and I got an email from Mike Haley. I got contacted by Mike Haley today. He said, can I have that photo, mate? Can you send it to me?
Awesome.
So that's where I was at, where even Munster players, where they have professional photographers, he saw a picture and was like, oh, I really want that to remember.
Amazing.
That day. So yeah, it was unbelievable. And I've got to say, like, I come back from Thomond Park raving about Munster and their fans, and I honestly thought they were going to lose a certain something by playing it in Dublin. Not a chance. It was
atmosphere,
incredible.
Yeah, the atmosphere on TV looked incredible. So for you to actually be in the Aviva, it must have been out of this world.
I've never been in a stadium like it, at club level anyway. Do you remember, Phil, the Millennium Stadium for, must have been like 2016...
Yeah.
2017, it was Wales v Ireland.
Maybe it was slightly, 14-15, around that time.
It was 14-15 or whatever it was, but it was that goal line stand, 10 minutes, Wales camped on their own line, they managed to keep Ireland out, and the noise in the Millennium Stadium was just unbelievable. It was like that.
Yeah.
It was that level, but for 80 minutes. And
80 minutes plus the extra time, 100 minutes plus the penalty shootout.
What do you think, before we get into any substance of the game, how do you feel about penalty shootouts?
I thought they were amazing.
I think it was a spectacle. If you can't decide after 100 minutes of rugby...
Because it would have been decided on tries scored and things like that.
Yeah, if you can't decide it in that 100 minutes, I think it's not right to just keep playing, because the injury risk and the quality will drop off. Yeah.
And also, the format they have now, the only other time I've seen it is when Cardiff went up against...
Oh, the drop goals.
Leicester.
No, it wasn't drop goals.
It wasn't drop goals.
It was place kicks.
Wasn't straight from the front kicks.
That's right. Straight from the
post. Like, forwards shanking it. And, there's something unfair about that. I think the new format of left, middle, right, and coming further out, is perfect.
Three place kickers.
Yeah,
I think you choose your three kickers.
Yeah, and that was just amazing. I tell you what's amazing about it was that you're watching these guys, and they are legitimately amazing rugby players.
Mm.
And you can see the pressure getting to them. And you don't realise that... Yeah, I think it paints them in a bit of a more human picture. I felt so sorry for...
Ben Healy.
I was hoping that Toulouse would win it, but I was hoping that Murray would miss his second. I think Murray's missing his second, or Corbury missing his second. Because the thought of Ben Healy missing two, I just thought, he won't be able to live with himself after this. But at least if he missed, Murray had missed, Healy had missed, and Corbury had missed. And like, we weren't good enough. But for one guy to miss two is just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And he didn't deserve that. Well, he did deserve it, because he missed two, didn't he?
Particularly because he'll have woken up today, if he actually got any sleep, not just thinking about the two kicks in the penalty shootout, which, like I say, wasn't all on his shoulders, because...
No, not at all.
Conor Murray missed and all the rest of it.
And, he actually stood up and did it.
But that's it was the drop goal.
The drop goal.
Oh, that's the one that will haunt him.
On the stroke of the 100th minute, and that was the last play of the game.
Because the one just before full-time, the kick from 56 metres or whatever it was, that was a shot
to nothing. That was very tough.
No one was expecting it. The drop goal, that's the one that will haunt him.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it was one hell of a game, though. I mean, the way Munster went about their business was brilliant. And as a guy who I do not know much about, because I don't watch any URC, but I tell you what, I want to watch a lot more of him now. Is it Jackie O'Donoghue?
God,
I love how he plays.
I know,
he's
awesome.
The abrasion.
Abrasive.
He's awesome.
A very, very tough player.
He will definitely go on that the Island Tour to New Zealand.
And he's played across the back row as well, hasn't he?
He's a six, mainly, I think.
Mm.
They've got Coombs as well, who's in their back row. They're missing Ty Byrne.
Yeah,
they're missing
the loose head
Flirty and
Kilcoyne.
So that was a really relatively young
and Conway
amongst the team, and Andrew Conway.
Yeah, missing quite. I mean, Earls and Zeebo are pretty handy, very experienced wingers, but Conway's a superb winger. So they're missing lots of players. But the positive, if Munster fans are going to take positives out of this game, it's the number of youngsters who came in and were exceptional. And the guys off the bench, five or six of the bench were 23 and under.
Yeah.
And they came in against, and the Toulouse bench
ridiculous.
Is like rugby royalty. And the Munster players arguably outperformed them. They were amazing.
Well, isn't this always the case? I mean, in my mind, it's always the case, at least. Clubs are always scratching around for the next superstar to turn them around. Not the Irish clubs, I will give them credit. But they're always a bit worried about, the depth's not enough. And usually it's because they just haven't given these lads a chance. Now, you look at the Munster back row this week, the replacements, and a few weeks ago when they played
Exeter.
Mm. And they're all young lads who are stepping forward, and it's brilliant to see. I mean, that is the story of rugby, and you can see, can't you, why the Munster fans would love this team so much, because they can see themselves there. They can see the guys they went to school with, they can see the guys that come from their local area or one of the counties or whatever it is, and just giving them a chance to go out and prove themselves is brilliant.
Mm. Yeah, and the one thing that you think of with Munster, and they absolutely brought it, and the fans were getting so behind. That defensive energy was just massive.
It's absolutely massive. Ridiculous. The work rate in defence, and the number of turnovers, and the commitment to the tackle, and commitment to the ruck to force Toulouse into a very difficult position. Because this Toulouse team, they're perhaps not playing the best rugby, the rugby that we played a couple of years ago. But they have still got world-class talent right across the park. They've got outrageous talent, and they really, really had to work for the full 100-plus minutes.
I guess the big difference would be, I mean, if you look at Marchand, who is a great hooker,
a really great hooker.
I think he was outplayed by his replacement, Malvaca. I thought Malvaca was brilliant.
Malvaca's amazing.
Malvaca, the one that gave that offload.
They're two French hookers. Two international hookers.
Yeah.
I think I'm right in saying it's these two keeping Camille Chat out the French team.
Yeah.
And they just rotate them like it's nothing. Just a sheer. And the other thing which shows exactly the resolve of Munster was the demolition in the scrum. So the scrum is so important in my mind. It's important that you at least get parity. They were getting battered. So to get battered, that is such a psychological blow to your forwards. Then they pick themselves up and they go and defend some more. That's a hard job.
They did turn that round within the course of the game.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure they ever really got it under control, to be fair.
It's interesting because Larkham said...
On 20 minutes.
Yeah, partway through the first half, he said the boys on the bench are going to shore up the front row.
Do you know what? It's exactly what you should say.
But they did. Just awesome. I think you're right. Toulouse aren't what they were, and I think Leinster will handily dispatch them.
I don't know.
It's not that handily.
I think they'll win.
It's not that they're not what they were. They're just not quite clicking. And it could be the hangover playing a lot of rugby. A lot of these boys were in the
ten Grand Slam winners.
Yeah, in the Six Nations, and were so important to that Six Nations team.
And they're having to play big teams in the top 14 because it's not so competitive.
Yes,
you know, we were talking about the Premiership last week. I'm sure we'll talk about the Premiership more. You know, I think we need to stop. We need to stop this chat about the Premiership being the most competitive league.
Incorrect. It's incorrect.
It's a cliche, and it's rubbish.
No, it's correct.
The top 14 is the most competitive competition, and the fact that Toulouse have to put out their first strength team last week against La Rochelle because they're in a dogfight in the to reach the playoffs.
It depends, it says everything. Right? So, I may have mentioned before, and this is again a little bit anecdotal, I guess. But we all know an individual who played in the French leagues and played, you know, for a long time in both Pro De Deux and in Top 14. And his view was, don't come back to the Premiership because you get more time off because of the bigger squads when you go and play, you know, whoever else it is. Now, but that is also true.
That point doesn't necessarily mean it's less, more or less competitive. It just means that a player will be playing more or less.
What it means, I think, is that. That is exactly right, Phil. The Premiership teams have to play their first teams more often. And when you play your first teams more often, you get these just absolute brutal games week in, week out. France, you can have a team like Montpellier who play André Pollard in their second string. And that's crazy. But, you know, it's still fairly frequent that, say, if you've got a player with, say, a dodgy knee or whatnot, he won't play away games. Or they'll save a lot of their first team
just in terms of competitiveness. A measure of competitiveness would be how many teams are competing for the top spots. And mathematically, at the moment, there are eight teams in the top 14, two games to go. There are eight teams who could finish in top spot.
That's incredible. Well,
Are
you willing to, like, your point about it being you getting more time off and they're able to manage squad game time better, and so the Premiership approval. But just on that point alone, my point was we need to stop saying the Premiership. Like, it's just it's said like robotically the Premiership's the most competitive league. It's not.
It is,
because Phil's just demonstrated eight teams could still finish top.
Look, as a player, as an individual player, there is no harder place to be than the Premiership.
Well, I'm not talking about an individual player.
But I mean, that would be my measure. So if the individual player is under stress, it's because the whole squad is under stress because they're constantly being worked. With France, you do get a bit more leeway, and I think that's
my measure of the competitiveness of the league would be anyone being able to beat anyone.
Well,
and I think, and certainly the having it closer in the table towards the end would be one way of identifying that.
The other way you could say it is that look at the amount of teams that have won the top 14. I think seven different teams in 7 years.
That'd be another measure of
That would be very competitive.
But it still doesn't take away from the fact that if you're in a Premiership team, it's brutal week in, week out. And you don't get rests, and that is...
I think that is just a different point.
It's a different point, which is correct, but it's not... I would say
that is a measure of competitiveness.
Okay.
If you can't rest your best players, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, but it's not translating to a more even table, therefore a more competitive table.
And I guess
table.
My point was, last week against La Rochelle, Toulouse put out a very similar team to the one they played against Munster, which Munster definitely didn't do. The reason is because Toulouse are currently in sixth, and they are only 5 points ahead of ninth.
Just on who can win it and who can't, I think that's a really good metric of a certain type of competitiveness. I'll give you another one, though. At the start of this season, we said certain teams would finish high. And of those teams, you've got Sale, you've got Exeter, and you've got Bristol, all in a little cluster at the bottom half of the table.
And London Irish.
And, yeah.
Which you said would be top four.
Well, you know, if they started Arundel every week, they probably would be top four.
They would have won the league already.
Exactly.
Give them the trophy.
So, you know, there was lots of ways to measure competitiveness, but, you know, in terms of...
I imagine if you'd done the same thing, if you got all the pundits' predictions for the top 14, not many of them would have had Montpellier, Bordeaux, Beglers and Cast as the top three.
No.
Ahead of Racing, Toulouse, La Rochelle, Toulon, Clermont.
Don't get me wrong. top 14 is a very, very, very good league.
It's the most competitive league.
It's probably the one with the highest salaries. It's all the rest of it.
Yeah, but there's a salary cap.
Yeah, it's definitely the one with the highest.
There's a salary cap and there's a player nationality player quota.
Yeah,
the GIF.
So I was having this discussion with the boys from the Thistle podcast because their view is, you know, look at the top of the URC.
UFC.
Isn't that competitive? It's like, no, it's better. Like, I don't think there's much doubt is that the top team in the UFC, Leinster, is probably better than the top team in... Well, we know.
We've just seen it.
Yeah. We've just seen it. But that's not the same as having a competitive league.
Yeah, it's a very different point.
Yeah. Because the, Leinster sent... You imagine a Premiership team doing back-to-back three away games with a B team. No. Not going to happen, but Leinster did it.
Yeah.
And went to South Africa and did it.
Yeah, although they did lose, actually, both games.
Good.
But their third string put in a very good performance against multiple World Cup winners in their backyard.
There are some crazy things going on in those Celtic, and South African, and Italian.
And Italian.
Yeah, URC teams.
Yeah. Well, just back to my point maybe before, because Leinster's another great example of it. The future of Irish rugby looks very rosy with the depth of talent that is coming through. And they weren't playing this weekend, but add Ulster to that mix because they put in they won away in Toulouse and only very narrowly lost at home to Toulouse with, again, a very young squad, incredibly young backline. When Billy Burns at like 27 and John Cooney at maybe 30 or 31.
McCluskey at 29, but yeah.
The old boys of the... Yeah. The back line, it's a good sign.
Is there any more tragic comparison than the games this week for the Welsh teams? So every single nationality, I think, across the Six Nations, except for the Italians, were watching some of their teams compete in Europe. So whether it be Leinster, Munster, the English teams, the French teams, even the Scottish teams had a right ding-dong against Wasps. And who did they...
Glasgow lost Lyon.
Away at Lyon, which is a tough place to go.
Meanwhile, while Sale are hammering it out under the lights in Paris, a very sad spectre of Ospreys Dragons was happening in Wales. It's pathetic.
Cardiff managed to put 42 points on Zebre at home. Yeah.
Well done, Cardiff.
Well done.
So just with my England fan and my Premiership bread and butter hat on, I'm much more down on it over the last few weeks. My mood, because we've seen these European teams, and when you look at it again, those French teams, and yes, the Toulouse had some international superstars there, but actually, I think when you look at the top 14, and when you look at the Irish provinces, what they have, regardless of salary cap, is they actually have teams which are benefiting the national team, and I look at Premiership sides, and I think partly because of the salary cap drop, which is already taken effect, or definitely if it hasn't already, will be taking effect very soon. Actually, what you're getting is you're still getting quite a lot of mediocre, and like this is by South African standards, a lot of mediocre South Africans, which is still extremely high quality. In addition to the World Cup winners, you're getting a lot of mediocre South Africans. And we talk about the depth of talent, and England's inside centre that we've talked about many, many times is one example. You look through the Premiership, how many 12s are there that are English?
Yeah, but the problem is with this...
There's probably more Irish 12s regularly playing within the four teams than there is across 13 in England.
I think the way that the Irish teams are set up, you have the provinces perfectly structured feeding into the national team, okay? I think you've got to look at it the other way around. So if you've got the Irish team at the top of the tree, everything feeds into that. I think you've got to look at it from the other way for England, which is the English team, the English national team, has to fit into what the Premiership club wants. Because at the moment, what we've got is this preposterous situation where lads who never get a sniff for England turn out to be Lions or 70 cap internationals for a Celtic nation.
Why do France manage to get that balance right, as I see it? Because they now have a system where it's a league very much like the Premiership, which, well, assuming the Premiership ever goes back to relegation, they have promotion, relegation, They have not state-sponsored rugby, and yet it seems to be feeding the national team.
Well,
for the first time in 15 years.
But
you've got to look at it over a long period of time to say whether this is...
that balance, broadly speaking, correct. You're right, there's something to be learned from the French, game, definitely.
It does look like it right now. Because I think it will continue because it's on solid foundations.
Yeah,
but it's not always been like that.
They have a very similar situation to England. Huge amounts of talent. I mean, anyone says England has not got huge amounts of talent, they really have.
Yeah,
but they just need the model at the. They need to stop the fighting of who has the supremacy here. Is it the clubs? And do we build the clubs to feed England, or does England give a proposition to the clubs to make sure?
But you're never going to like now. So the time to do that, to square that circle, was the dawn of professionalism in the mid 90s. Yeah. Now that we've had this structure embedded for 25 years, it takes a monumental change, a monumental effort, and 15 plus organisations all agreeing and aligning and some giving stuff up in order to get it. Why? I can't see it.
The RFU should give up the England team. And then give it to the Premiership.
Sorry, I didn't want to take it too far down. I think it's just I've just been reflecting, watching those Irish provinces, watching the French teams, three of which are in the European Cup semi-finals, Heineken Cup semi-finals. I think they have got it right. And you talk about the depth of talent and in England and stuff. I'll come back to that inside centre position. You look at the Premiership, there's probably two or three English 12s.
Good English.
Out of the 13 teams.
Dan Kelly. Mark Atkinson. Not really playing. Mark Atkinson's a good one.
Mark Atkinson. Yeah.
Who finally, after 10 years of playing at high level,
Curtis Rowan, Ian Whitten.
Gopeth.
But it's like
Rowan van Rensburg.
I strongly disagree with top-down mandating. Yeah, we need to find some insight. They'll find them when they're ready.
No, I agree. But France have got the 19 people in every matchday squad. Maybe, have got to be French.
Maybe the best.
England do have the quotas, don't they?
I mean,
England do have both the English qualified AQP. Yeah. Credits, but also those quotas and players. In.
Maybe the best guy who was likely to wear the England 12 shirt is now playing for Scotland in Redpath, and he wanted to play for England.
Mm.
Luckily, you've got Max Adjoma, who's going to be the saviour of the world, so you won't need to worry too much.
Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to take us too far down that
Nick
road.
Nick Tompkins plays 12 for Wales.
Oh, I was raving about him for bloody...
Could have had him.
I mean, it's easy to say in hindsight, isn't it, when they're playing international rugby.
Johnny Williams, could have had him.
Not many... I'm not too worried about that one. Nick Tompkins, you can listen back to podcasts, I was clamouring for him well before he was a Wales international.
Yeah, I think the fact that he went to...
Chris Harris, I didn't see being as good as he was.
No, I didn't either. I think no one did. I think Nick Tompkins' escapades at Dragons, and in a Welsh shirt, to be fair, suggest that he's a far better Saracen than he is either a Welsh player or Dragons player. Oh,
he's very handy for Wales. There's something about him. He's very unusual in his ability to beat defenders and break the line in a 12 shirt.
Exceptional for Saracens.
Yeah. Everyone's exceptional for Saracens.
That's true.
They just know how to get the best out of people. Even what's his name? Sanderson. Alex Sanderson, they got the best out of him
which is
remarkable.
That's impressive.
So, heartbroken for Munster and friend of the pod, Graham Rowntree.
Yes. Yeah. But they'll take a lot out of this game.
Oh,
that young squad to push the champions and the team of that quality so close.
Yeah.
But it's still heartbreaking.
And so there will be a game in Dublin again. It will be Leinster hosting Toulouse. With 5 stars on their badge against the team that are looking most likely to get the 5th star on their jersey.
Leinster are
First half. I mean, I didn't see the first half until afterwards. That's the one thing. I was talking last week, I'm in Dublin, I'll get to watch it. But actually, I missed most of the first half of Leinster.
Well, do you want to do Leinster or do you want to do Sale first?
Let's touch on Leinster.
I've got a really, really brief summary of why Leinster are good. They don't make mistakes. And I think I think Tigers came with a really good game plan, a really well thought out strategy. And they played well. I think Tigers played as well as could be reasonably expected. Harry Potter had a poor game.
Tigers turned over too much ball, particularly in that first half.
Yeah.
They had so few opportunities where they strung phases together. Part of that was because Leinster were excellent, but part of it was just losing ball in contact, turning over at the ruck, losing line-up ball, missing...
Which is unheard of.
Yeah.
Unheard of.
Their line-up's been so good. But
then, that second half, right, so I was looking at the coaches in the change room, and Stuart Lancaster's there chatting away, and then in the other room, you've got Borthwick talking to his forwards. I'm like, which of these boys would I put my money on to turn this around right now? And I'm thinking Borthwick all day long. And I think, you know, the reason that they lost is not because of the tactics they employed. It's because every time they tried to put pressure on Leinster, they did not make a mistake. Very rarely did they make a mistake. Mm. They got driven over on lineouts twice, I think, certainly once. But the ultimate tactic was to put up high balls and pressure them that way. And you know, they're just so assured.
Yeah, that was. Ford did it quite a few times in the first half, and Keenan and James Lowe. There was one in particular fairly early on where Ford put up one of his spiral bombs, and James Lowe hit it at full pace. He was running at full pace with a spiral bomb, which can move like 10 yards in either direction, and he just nailed it. Just looks so solid. Right, that tactic's not going to work then.
Nope.
And the other tactic that they seemed to employ was they targeted Genge and Visa. Both did it early on, running at Sexton. And Visa actually hurt his shoulder in about the sixth minute, targeting Sexton after the whistle had gone. Now, I don't think Visa actually knew the whistle had gone. I'll give him a little bit of credit, although it wouldn't be entirely out of character to go after the... But Sexton was both fine himself in contact, but was also marshalled really well by his back row. They covered him.
I also think,
and Henshaw as well on the inside, who's basically like a back row in defence.
I also think one of the key characteristics to a world-class fly half, and once they are a world-class fly half, they've already developed this characteristic, so we don't give them any credit, is that they're absolutely nails. So George Ford is nails. It doesn't mean, you might not think he's nails, but he's absolutely nails.
Yeah,
Finn Russell today was nails.
Finn Russell is nails.
Dan Bigger is nails.
Faz.
Faz is not the same league.
Finn Russell's the one that surprises me that he's nails, because he just doesn't look.
But that's,
he's so good.
That's how they got
nails.
There, mate.
He just doesn't look like an athlete.
But he's so strong.
Yeah, he is.
They're like members of Jackass back in the day. Like they should be breaking, but they're not. They relish it.
So yeah, that was a clear tactic early on, but it was no good. Those were two tactics. High balls and kicking and target Sexton seemed to be a lot of Leicester's tactics in the first half.
I don't know if that was a tactic for Leinster. I think that's just how Leicester play. Like it was an amazing stat that I had to check and go, is that right? When we got our sort of the stat packs and stuff came through, and George Ford kicks the ball more than he passes.
Yeah, probably. it doesn't surprise me that,
you
actually.
Know, that's one of those things which might not be as surprising as you think, because when you look at Leicester lining up in defence in particular, George Ford will sit in a 13-2 formation with Stewart. So Stewart and Ford will cover the backfield. So quite often he's receiving a ball just to kick it. So it doesn't tell the story of receiving from the nine. It's probably receiving from the
Leicester kick more than any other team as well.
Yeah,
which I'm not knocking it, because it's
it doesn't surprise
and
me.
And if you had Stewart as a fullback, you'd back yourself to kind of win a rugby tennis game, and I think they were trying to draw Leinster into it.
Yeah,
it's just that Leinster is so good.
They basically, in my mind, it's all about momentum. And we'll talk about Sale later, because I think the same thing happened. Tigers will come away from that thinking they could have won it, and I think they could have won it. That Nadolo try goes over, and it's a different game. But because they failed to get over the line, and even the Nadolo substitution was perfect, I thought. They needed something now in that position.
To change the strategy, change the focal point as well. Because at that point, they were 20-0 down.
Yes.
Do you think there was an element that the 20-0 down just kind of gave Leinster that ability to kind of not take their foot off the gas, but they had other gears that they could and would have and in future weeks will shift through?
Well, they didn't need to do anything risky. Yeah. They could control the tempo of the game and force Leicester to play but risky.
I would argue that they didn't. I think the bigger mistake... So I think Leicester played pretty much a perfect game tactically when the ball was in play. I think the bigger mistake was turning down kicks for goal. So if you think about the way that Leinster built their score in the first half, it was try, kick, try, kick. Yeah.
When they were 20 points to 7 down, they had an easy gimme of a kick in front of the post and they went to the corner. But they ended up scoring a try from that.
I can't remember, to be honest, it all merged into one.
Yeah, but they had a couple of kicks in the first half that they turned down.
Yeah.
One from a penalty early on, which was not a gimme by any stretch, but they went for the corner, got nothing out of it, turned the ball over like two phases later. And there's another one as well.
I mean, just stay in the fight. That's what I would say. If you're against Leinster, stay in the fight. And they semi did that. But
if you look at the Toulouse game as well, Toulouse turned down kickable points, particularly on, and they went for the corner and backed themselves. And they almost fell into the same trap that Exeter fell into against Munster, because Munster are such a difficult team to break down.
Oh, by the way, we talked about Ben Healy. Carberry missed two very, very kickable kicks.
Still at Munster's maul defence. I'm not saying it's unique, but it's certainly very good. And they almost set up around a maul like it's a scrub. I don't know if you've noticed this.
Well, and they compete. They managed to do that whilst competing. A lot of teams don't compete when they're going for a big drive, but they managed to compete and stop the drive.
Just watch how they do it next time. It's like they formed like a... just watch it. It looks different.
I think there was... It wasn't a chasm, but there was absolutely a significant golfing class, which Leicester can bridge over time with effort.
I think Leicester played, particularly second half, pretty much the perfect game, and it still wasn't enough.
Second half they did.
They did.
Although they were the better team in the second half, albeit...
Harry Potter will be kicking himself. He's had such a good season, and he must have thrown three, four balls on the floor.
And charged down kick that almost led to a try.
Yeah, I just felt sorry for him. I felt very, very sorry for him, because he's been so good. But yeah, we all have bad games occasionally, and this will be one which he'll be, which he will remember.
It's Leicester. I mentioned the point about Munster and the young squad learning from this. Leicester, I think there's similar positives, but not to the same degree, because there are young guys and inexperienced guys in that Leicester team who will learn a lot from this. The problem is the two of the main focal points, or the two biggest focal points, the two leaders on the pitch, Genge and Ford, aren't going to be around.
I think there's a bigger problem than that, actually. The problem is that Leicester put out this team and it's full of good young talent. So, you think of Chesham, you think of George Martin, Wickham.
I didn't realise Ollie Chesham's journey, by the way. He got let go by Leicester.
Did he?
And until it was
only about 19 or 20 now, isn't it?
Last season he came back to Leicester, but he spent 2 years at Nottingham.
Do you think there was another, a spelling mistake?
Another, if you want to talk about, again, just to keep banging that drum about how you want to really make English rugby competitive, there you go, you've got an amazing product in the Championship, developing so many players, Ollie Chesham. If you give up on the Championship, Ollie Chesham's won't happen.
Just on Ollie Chesham. Was there some sort of spelling mistake, or was there an administrative error? And then one day they called him out, like, "You've got rid of who?
Yeah.
What? Yeah. Where is he?
Yeah, the man. He's 6'8". He's nearly 20 stone.
Oh, we thought you meant the other Ollie Chasm.
Rafael as well.
He's got massive this year, hasn't he?
Yeah,
his shoulders have got big.
I thought he was Leicester's best player in the first half, which is actually not that difficult because they didn't play particularly well, but he was just everywhere and working so hard.
He's Welsh qualified, isn't he? So the regions will be eyeing him up.
I'm pretty sure he is. Yeah, I'm sure he's Welsh.
He's definitely Welsh or Welsh qualified.
Sorry. Back to the problem that Leicester have, because I didn't actually finish that point. The problem Leicester have is all these young lads are playing, right? Stewart will be one. Kelly's another one. Potter. You know the rest of the names, right?
Yeah.
Van Portfleet, loads of them. They're all going to need new contracts. So if you are Leinster or Munster, you're like, well, the future's bright. We'll just write them a cheque for whatever they want. That's not quite how it goes, I know.
But if they want to play for Ireland, they can't go anywhere else.
Yeah. Whereas
they're locked in.
You know, Newcastle might have a bit of spare cash and might need a second row, and they're going to come after Chesham or Martin or somebody, or whoever's got that spare cash, because that's how salary caps work. So how on earth, it's almost not worth investing in your academy, because you'll get them for a couple of years. You'll get a couple of years discount whilst you get them good, and then when they get really good, they're going to have to get snapped up. It's going to be really interesting to see how you work the economics on this.
Or you want them really good but spaced out enough so that one can naturally come to the end of a cycle, like Ben Youngs probably. Like Ben Youngs, I mean, some people would argue that time is now in the way that Faf de Klerk and Raffy Quirk are. But yeah, there's a perfect example: Faf de Klerk, Raffy Quirk.
You need two guys a year coming in from your academy, and the rest have got to go, and you've got to decide which two you want.
But yeah, you always need them two in every position. Or one per year in every position, because of the attrition.
And a good example is Saracens that got like amazing number of second rows. As a result, they go, well, Joel Kapoka, it's like, well, actually...
go to Leon.
The really good second rows we've got are kind of are quite young, so we've got Ezekwe and Atoji, so we can't have you as well.
Yeah. Mm. And yeah, he'll be picking up big money now. Big money. Good for him.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Get that cash. Get all that French cash.
Yeah. I'm glad. So in this game, I'm glad Leicester made it a better fight and more respectable, because at 20-0, it was just a bit
looking ominous.
A bit sad. And that Leicester team would get, if it finished 20-0, or if Leinster just kept on that trajectory and it finished from like 40-0 or 40 points to 5, the Leicester boys are taking nothing out of that.
No.
The way that it finished, and the two tries that they scored, and the Ashton try, I loved. I know Ashton and Ford, who put the amazing pass in, they're not young Leicester lads, but for them to score those two tries, I think the team will get a lot out of it. They played some really good rugby in the second half, just not quite enough, and they left themselves too big a gap.
Like I said about Ashton last week, I mean, I don't know what goes on there. I don't know how he sort of... It's sublime to the ridiculous. You know, he's at Quinns, he's at Worcester, didn't go down too well at Sale. You know, ridiculous. But I think all he does really... I don't know if I made this comparison last week, but he's like alcohol. He just either increases or decreases the mood that you're already in. And he does that for environments. So if you've got a good environment, he will flourish.
Yeah.
If there's any chinks in your environment, he will exacerbate them and ask questions and needle and poke.
Well, maybe that's why Borthwick brought him in. It's like, I think we've got a good thing going here. I need to stress test it.
Yeah, the litmus test.
Seems all right.
But he scored again. He's the top try scorer in Europe, top try scorer in the Premiership, set a record in the top 14. In his season.
Is he not equal top try scorer in Europe with James Lowe, who...
Oh, sorry, I mean overall.
Oh, overall,
in Europe.
Ever. I was just saying, James Lowe's top try scorer this year.
But
that matchup was a particularly fun one because of what Ashton said about James Lowe. I don't know if it was mentioned in the build-up or whatever.
No, or so if it was, I missed it.
Ashton, in his early days at Leinster, Ashton said, he's not an international winger. I don't know what they're doing. He's not good. Ashton said some quite disparaging things, and then that was brought up a lot. And over in Ireland, that was a lot, filled a lot of the newspapers.
It's interesting because Ashton, I know he's a Wigan pie eater, but he takes his conditioning very seriously.
That's what you said about James Lowe. He's too big.
Lowe's conditioning, I have no idea how hard he trains or anything like that, but he doesn't look like the most conditioned winger, but he's a hell of a player.
The reports out of Sale were that he was the fastest guy still, him and Aaron Reid. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you watch him play now. It is like watching a 28-year-old play.
He's still lightning.
He's always been
lightning. He doesn't look it.
No. And I've always suggested he doesn't look fast because he knows where to be and therefore he doesn't need to run very fast.
Yeah.
He just sort of trots in tries. But
he has that ability, and he is also absolutely lightning. Yeah. Because I didn't think he was that fast. This is going back years and years and years, back like 2012 or 13. And I, for some reason, had it in my head that he wasn't that fast. And then the England-Australia game where he scored from 100 metres and just... He's already run 60 metres and then just ghosts round Drew Mitchell, who was fairly handy as a back three player.
Think about his last handful of tries over the last few weeks. He got that wonderful chip and chase. I think Maroney kicked the ball, but Ashton goes around the outside of someone and scores. Or did Ashton kick it? I can't remember. But I love the try scored against Leinster. The way they cut in and then they both faded out together is absolutely beautiful. So, you know, he can see
hitting that line and recognising that Ford will recognise that space. There's actually few wings in the world that would run that line.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of, that's not a normal line. People like to do the opposite, don't they? Which is kind of run out to in. So you're attacking the shoulder.
Easier because you can see the ball
Yeah, you can see the ball
into your hands a lot,
and you should be attacking a defender who's looking towards the
looking
ball,
looking out,
which is a it's a great way to run.
You cut against the green,
but he did the exact opposite,
and created the space by doing so.
But also, you need a class player like Ford who just
to
always
deliver the pass.
Just puts the
if he could just have kept his mouth shut at Sale, he could be playing with Ford next year.
maybe he can work his way back.
I think you're right. Leicester will take a lot from that, because if that team that started for Leinster were starting against New Zealand this summer, you kind of wouldn't be overly surprised.
Nope. Yeah,
there's not. You go, okay, that looks like an Ireland test.
Yeah, basically.
Jack Donoghue, get Jack Donoghue in.
Yeah, maybe one or two boys, but not many.
Chris Farrell.
Get Balakoon in.
And Chris Farrell.
Oh, Chris Farrell's
good.
But you can't, monster.
You can't really get rid of Ringrose.
Yeah, you can. Get Chris Farrell in.
Well, maybe. I'll tell you who. So, I'll make a brief point on him and then I'll ask you a question. Who I love, and I thought he was player of the tournament in the Six Nations, probably, ignoring the French squad, Josh van der Fleer. So, amazing Six Nations. I think he's in the form of his life. I think he had a very, very good game. His try, question is, did you see the setup for his try? Did you read it, or did you get sucked in? It was the dummy drive off the line out, and Leicester bought it hook, line, and sinker. Yeah. Everyone bites in,
yeah,
and he just glides round, and he's got one on one with Potter.
Yeah. So he's saying, like, oh, Potter's, you know, used to defending that position. It's like, no one's used to defending that position. I mean, you know, there are 12s that obviously play 12 all the time, but that's not the reason that Van der Fleer went in. Van der Fleer went in because he's a monster of a carrier. And it's a good move, isn't it? Because
it's a great move.
You've got to ask yourself the opportunity cost of not challenging the drive on the off chance that Van der Fleer is going to be around the corner. It's just not worth doing.
I thought I know very little about lineup moves and drive, catch and drive. It looked like a really, really well set up move for a try that Leicester rightly bought, but to create that space was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, just think of the pressures, the psychology there.
You've got to leave one a guard on each side from your forward pack to counteract it.
And
then you're putting six against eight on your drive.
All you're thinking is you're in the corner of your own stadium, your fans are going mental, and right now you need to be as physically dominant as you possibly can. And you're just focusing on when that man hits the ground and burying that mall. That's all you're thinking of. So, it does throw a bit of a spanner in the works, which is why you do get so many trick plays off lineouts, particularly close in.
Mm. Yeah, that was a lovely one, I thought.
It was really good. Sam Clark's emailed us. contacteggchasers@gmail.com is how you can get in touch.
Yeah.
Some more cracking correspondence again. He says, love the pod, blah, blah, blah. Just watching the Leinster v Leicester game, wondering why when the game's already won, the teams bother tackling, hitting rucks and risking injury when there's a semi-final only days away. Let Leicester score. Who cares?
you've made this point previously, JB. Specifically last year about Courtney Laws when he went back playing before a potential Lions tour.
Yeah.
With nothing at stake at that point in the league.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it.
He's the captain of his club, and these are professional athletes, so
that's it.
That's what they do.
Sam, I totally understand your point. That's just not how these guys are wired, is it?
Yeah.
But professional athlete.
That's the reason why they are professional athletes.
That's the reason why they're professional athletes.
As a professional athlete, he's not just professional for his club, but also for England, and it's his job. So I think he should get his contract written so he does get time off from England, but he should get additional time off.
If it's a nothing game.
Yeah, like a salary sacrifice type thing. Like, here, have my salary back and go and get someone from Nottingham to play this game.
I'm kind of... So, Courtney Laws is a one-club man. He's my favourite player. His contract is up after the World Cup with Northampton. Mm. And he'll have that quandary. I really, really want to see him at Toulouse or somewhere like that. I really want to see Courts.
How old will he be?
He's 33
now. So it'll be
34
next season. So he can do like
three European Cups with Toulouse.
Yeah, but he could basically do the Jerome Kano rule.
Yeah,
which would be a perfect one for him.
Yeah,
that I think I wouldn't like to see him go obviously before the next World Cup, and he won't because of his contract. I think he should do. Go and make some big cash in France.
Go make some cash, and
or even big cash in Japan.
And you can play
for 10 years in Japan.
Yeah. Photocopy his own cash.
I don't see Courtney Laws wired like that. I think he'll be Racing, Toulouse, one of them.
I think he will.
And he'll put himself through the meat grinder in the top 14.
Yeah, I think he will as well. But if someone in Japan offers him more cash,
Yeah, he's got a family to think about.
Exactly.
Why not?
Exactly. Yeah.
And the other one that Sam Clark on email said, also after watching the shootout in the other game, would like to hear your thoughts on quote unquote respect the kicker. Now, I didn't notice what came through on the telly. Maybe I was just so whipped up by the emotion of it. But all I remember is everyone just kind of going. The main overwhelming noise I heard. Shh.
Yeah.
Which in itself is a frightening noise.
If I had any control over the crowd whatsoever, and as a Munster kicker, so I guess if they asked, the crowd might, you know, respect their wishes. Can you just give me general background, Trasher, like you're not watching? just talk among yourselves. I'll be here. Not shh. Stop it!
And then when it, because I don't know, did you? It obviously came across to some like there were some people heckling and stuff.
Yeah, good. I mean, that's the whole point of home advantage, isn't it? That's the point.
Yeah, it didn't. I didn't really know. It didn't stand out to me. It wasn't like they're playing in Argentina and they had laser pens shining in their eyes.
That's the point, isn't it? That's the whole point.
And the obviously the French team there was playing in Ireland. Any teams playing in France, like Sale, the TV replays go missing. If any French player does anything that could even possibly be illegal or they could get penalised for, there are no TV replays at any point until the game's finished.
Yeah.
Which is just one of those known things in France.
It is.
Which is ludicrous.
Some refereeing decisions as well, which were, you know, I think controversial. I have no problem with any of them, really. I mean, I like. If we've got
this in the wrestling game.
Let's jump to the disco dope.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, there's a few angles on this. Let's start with the build-up, right? So, Alex Anderson was on the ruck this week, and some of the stuff which was being said on the ruck, it just blows my mind. And I think
we're spending a lot of time on grassroots podcasting in this.
Yes, we are spending a lot of.
It's good to support the little guys.
It is, and they need all the help that they can get.
So, go on, tell me, because I've not listened to it. So I've only ever listened to one episode of the ruck.
I don't even know what it is.
It's a bunch of guys. They're very well meaning, and they put a lot of work into it. So I give some time. I was listening to the Sanderson interview, right? And I've now come to the conclusion that he's half genius, half insane, and I don't know which parts are which anymore. I'm confused by the whole thing. So in the build up, apparently he bought a laser. Some lasers and some smoke machines down to a meeting room in Carrington. Now, if you think you can recreate the Disco Dome in Paris in a meeting room in Carrington on Wednesday afternoon, I just don't know if it's comparable. Maybe that's me. But I mean, if you can do that there, maybe I could do it down here. I mean, I don't know. So that would be like the first thing.
So I've heard those sailboys have had lots of experience of similar scenarios in the halls of residence.
during lockdowns.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the first thing. I was like, bloody hell, really? They better be winning all the lineouts. The second one, which again blew my mind, is like, yeah, we've got a neuropsychologist. I've heard about this neuropsychologist before, and we're going to go to the ground. We're going to acclimatise because there's a big screen there. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. It's a screen. I mean, what do you want to know about the screen? It's a screen. You're going to look at it on Saturday, and then you're going to play. You know,
take a trip to the cinema.
What's wrong with you? Like, so, and I was just thinking, like, this is what you do with puppies, isn't it? So you get a brand new puppy and you put it in a cage and leave it in your kitchen for 2 hours to acclimatise. But they're not puppies. They're like high level testosterone fueled athletes. I want him to be saying things like, We don't care about their screen. We don't care about their stupid blue shirts. We don't care about their big wages. We're going to go there and we're going to batter them.
Yeah, we're going to manhandle them.
Yeah.
I just love the idea that Sale might have done a fitness session doing hill sprints up from the front of the cinema to the back.
Yeah, just
while someone's filming it and projecting it onto the big screen.
You know, it's like the it's like the Mind Gym. That's a library, right? So you've got all of this insanity going on at Sale now.
It is that what's the incremental marginal gains? It's those all the 1%, isn't it?
Well, I've got a theory on why this happens, and maybe I'll share that with you later. But yeah, and the last one is, you know, we've got to be in the right emotional space. And I spoke about, you know, being emotional against the French teams, and come on, you're not going to out-emotion them. And if you're thinking about your emotion, if you're thinking that, God, is my emotion right? I've never thought that. And if I did think that, that's just another thing I've got to worry about. I've got to catch that ball. I've got to win that line. I've got to, hang on, am I emotionally all right to scrimmage? What? Just scrimmage, right? So this was the build-up to the game. And I'm thinking, oh my word, what is going to happen? Then the game kicked off. And now I'm thinking, Alex Anderson's a genius again. Because I tell you what, he had a job, didn't he? He had a job, and that was he needed to project as much force and power from his undoubtedly massive team onto Racing as he possibly could. And I think the tactics that he selected and the execution of those tactics were almost perfect. They were almost perfect. The way that they handled their kick chase was bloody brilliant. And unlike Leicester, they managed to draw the defenders onto the kick chase. They shortened the kick, and people were just getting levelled. Tom Curry levelled someone two or three times, and once you get levelled once, the next catch is not quite so certain. I mean, even Keenan and whoever and Lowe, if you level them a few times, they think, oh, I'm not sure I want to get this.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what happened. So they're levelling these wrestling players over and over again. I thought the you know, the driving was good, the carrying was good, and you've got to be careful, Sale. Like, if you get on top of them physically, they fold. And I thought, oh, if that happens here, we could be in for a bit of a beating. But I thought the strategy and the tactics was about as good as you could plan, bearing in mind what they needed to do.
And the difference ultimately was a little bit of class from a few very, very high class individuals. Teddy Thomas' try was ridiculous.
Well, just look at the four tries. All four tries. So it was Thomas, Finn Russell, Imhoff, and Max Spring, who I knew nothing about, but now love.
Yeah.
He's like the second coming of Bryce Doolan, this little steppy, rapid fullback. Those four tries were all world class tries, and the Teddy Thomas was just unbelievable.
It was, and you know, there will be a lot of people saying that he was in touch. Now,
I think the decision was right.
I would go with it. The on field decision. If the on field decision was, I think there's a foot in touch, then you stick with it.
Yeah, yeah. I completely agree with that. I thought that what was jarring about Frank Murphy today was he doesn't referee like other refs, so. You know, we're very used to. Actually, I say that when he checked for Faf de Klerk's knockdown, that was ridiculous. So he did a few weird things. But actually, if people ref like that all the time, I'd be completely okay with it. Completely okay.
Is it Andrew Brace?
Was it not Murphy?
He might have been one of the assistants, perhaps, but I'm pretty sure it was Andrew Brace.
Andrew Brace with.
Yeah.
I can't remember her name. Female Joy, referee, Joy Neville.
Joy Neville.
As TMO.
TMO.
Yeah. So I just thought, like, yeah, I can see why people get upset about certain decisions. So, like, the Tom Curry, when he got absolutely levelled. I thought, yeah, he's fallen into it. And then it's the player's job to finish the tackle. So, finish the tackle.
I thought I was very pleased that played out how it did play out, actually.
Yeah.
I thought that was going to be 5 minutes of TMO and then a red card. But obviously, because it was French players perpetrating.
Yeah, yeah.
No replays.
But, like, if you actually saw... So, in real time, you think, oh, red card here, or at least going down as a yellow.
Yeah, or at least several minutes of the TMO.
And then you watch in slow motion, you go, actually, you go through the process, probably got it right. So, you know, fair enough. The one he did get absolutely wrong was the very first one in the first 30 seconds.
Which one was that?
It was a hit on Lude, I think. No, Dupree. Dupree got smacked in the head. And that was wrong. But, you know, for Sale, it's heartbreaking. I think they did everything right. You know, they even managed to contain... I mean, this is not to be unkind on these two players, but you would expect, wouldn't you, the two of the three of Teddy Thomas, Vakatawa and Gael Ficou to be able to unstitch Hammersley and Rob Dupree with relatively, know, relatively little problem. Did not happen. Did not happen at all. The Finn Russell try, you would say that is pure luck. But then when you've been lucky as many times as Finn Russell, is it luck?
So I think he knows. I'm not saying it was intentional, but he knows when he connects with that ball, the big boot, the big volley, when he connects with it, he knows he's put backspin on it. So he then predicts where it is likely to bounce and predicts it perfectly.
I mean, I don't know if he knows or not. I don't know if he just throws that there and just, you know, if you could just freeze and say, Finn, what are you going to do now? He could tell you. But I think he knows. He just can't. I just think there's something different about that man. You know, they've said he's lucky when he nutmegs people. He's lucky when he throws world-class passes.
You can't
passes.
Be that consistently lucky.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so it's not lucky, is it? It's just amazing.
It's just amazing. Amazing.
Just amazing. I thought one of the passes for the Max Spring gave... Was it Max Spring that gave the pass? Was forward? Could have been checked
for
forward.
The Imhoff try.
Yep, that could have been forward.
Yeah. I think if he'd have been tackled then and stopped immediately... Yeah. It would definitely be, because I think the ball did travel forward, but because his momentum kept him always in front of the ball.
Yeah, and the ball travelling forward isn't what refs are looking for, it's direction of hands.
Yeah.
The Teddy Thomas one, so there were a load of things, but like, if that's how it's going to be reffed, so that's how it's going to be reffed, and no more can be said about it.
And if you've got that much talent in the outside back, where you've got Vakatawa on the bench, no team can contain that
one
game.
One quite sad thought I had about this game, which is, I've been watching this team build now for quite a while. This is the last significant game I believe that team will have together.
Because so many are leaving.
Yeah, so Faffle, Lude
and Faff and Lude, Rowan.
Yep.
AJ.
AJ, yeah.
You know, they're ripping. I think it's going to be some, not lean years, but...
I disagree. Well,
lean years by sales standard?
I disagree.
What, has it made the top four once in the past... Yeah, since 2006 when they won it.
Yes, something like that.
De Klerk is on his way, but they've got Quirk. McGinty's on his way. They've got Ford.
Hill for Lude.
You've got O'Flaherty coming into the back three, which will add a little extra bit of spice there.
Yeah,
they've still got loads of massive men in the pack.
Yeah, they've still got two Currys. Yeah.
They're going to be fine, and they might even be. Well, I mean, for all the good things that Akka van der Merwe does around the park, just his nuts and bolts.
Is he going?
Aren't good enough. I don't know, is he going?
No, sorry. I thought you were insinuating that he was going there.
I don't know.
Mind you, yeah. The other thing which Sale did really well was the scrimmaging. So, you know, they managed to scrimmage Racing. Oh, their defence at some points was absolutely awesome. So, you know, at one point they defend Racing from the 22 back to their own 10, then give away a penalty. But then that penalty, they turn into a scrum penalty in their favour. Then they get another scrum penalty, and then it goes for a line-out. The line-out doesn't go forward, but then the defensive pressure on the Racing line-out... Sorry, it doesn't go forward. It doesn't go straight. Means that they turn over the ball again. And you know, there were some things that they did which were just really, really good. They should be very, very happy with that. And I think coaching should be happy. Coach should be happy with the strategy that they employed.
They can take a lot out of that game.
They can. But again, as we said last week, you're not going to win a quarterfinal if you ship 40 points. And we're never going to score enough points to...
You're absolutely right. But I challenge anyone to come up with a defensive scheme.
But that's the point. The names we mentioned, I'm not saying they did anything wrong. But, I mean, the salary cap is... going to be an ongoing concern for Premiership clubs, because I think, and Phil's talked about this much earlier in the season, I think this is going to be the last year that any of them could be competitive, and this is as competitive as they were able to get.
Saracens will be competitive next year.
Saracens next year.
And they're going to use their new salary cap tool, which I invented for them.
Go on.
Well, they're going to get a handful of guys, five guys, and they're going to say, you guys will never play Premiership, so we're going to give you 250k a year, just like Leinster do, with their top five guys, only to play in Europe. So Itoje don't see him in the Premier. I wonder how quickly they would change the salary cap rules if they said, you're not going to see Itoje? Jamie George, the Vinopolas, and Owen Farrell. Owen Farrell, yeah, that's a good one. They'll never play
they'll
Premiership.
They'll never play Premiership.
But they'll be playing in Europe, so... You know.
Yeah, they'll be wearing a Saracen shirt.
Yeah.
And by the way, we're going to bring in Sia Khaleesi on a three-month deal.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. How do you like that, boys?
Yeah.
I don't think they'd be overly impressed at Premiership HQ, but they probably wouldn't know what to do because they're completely incompetent.
And the... did anyone watch La Rochelle versus Montpellier?
Given the... timing.
No,
I same kick off as Leicester-Leinster.
I've seen the highlights of it. Lovely. So it's three tries all, but Ehiho West scored four penalties, creating the difference between the two teams.
And I think La Rochelle were never out of control.
No, okay. La Rochelle were always yeah. ahead.
We have got the four best teams in the semi final.
Yeah, well, La Rochelle played some lovely rugby. Yeah. The three tries they scored. Danny Priso doing a very good Jamal Ford Robinson impression, galloping in from 20 yards.
His Jamal's was 50 yards, was it not?
I thought it was 80 yards, actually, Jamal's.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah. Priso was not quite as athletic, but...
Very
nice. His dive wasn't as good as Jamal's. Victor Vito scored a try, brilliant try, and then did a through-the-legs pass for Lavani Bottier to score in the to carry three guys over the line in the corner to score. They were very, very... it would have been a great game to watch more of. I'm just not entirely...
Yeah. Who's at home in the semi-finals? Because we've got Leinster play Toulouse. And is it La Rochelle play host Racing?
So, where I'm looking, which is Wikipedia, shows Racing and Toulouse as the two home teams, but I'm just going to check.
That's not right.
European champions. Trying to find the proper website.
Had Leicester won and Munster won, Munster would have gone to Leicester. Had Munster and Leinster won, it would have been in Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think Toulouse could have, because they were the lowest seeded team, I don't think they could have hosted a home game. Anyway.
So according to this, which is the official EPC rugby website, Leinster versus Toulouse, because it's next Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah.
So next Saturday at 3 o'clock in the Aviva Stadium.
Spare a thought for the BT Sport production managers having to book everyone's flights and hotels.
Oh, yeah. At short very short notice.
Yeah. Very high-end hotels.
Well, I keep hitting refresh because I'm expecting a message on where I'm going, and I don't want to say it.
Where do you want to go? Where do you want to go?
I'd quite like to go to Toulon.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. The other
Toulon Saracens
on Sunday. Toulon. Yes, I saw it's Toulon. So repeat of previous finals.
Yeah. So go on. What have you got fixtures wise?
So Leinster host Stade Toulouse in the Aviva, 3 o'clock next Saturday, and Racing. So now that is Leinster hosting because it's the Aviva in Dublin. Racing play La Rochelle in Lon. So Stade Boulard Delays. So it's a home country, but it's...
I think that might be because of a concert.
It is.
Because I mentioned this before about the Ed Sheeran thing. It's something similar.
Uga mentioned who it was, but I couldn't tell you. I know Nick Mullins had the second album, but thought he let himself down on the third.
So where is Lon? Stade... Hang on, I'm just going to find this. Stade Boulard.
It's important.
It is. I'm just thinking, geographically, is it closer to Racing or La Rochelle? Or is it equidistant? And Lon is... It's basically in Belgium.
Perfect. Everyone wants to go there.
Which makes it, obviously, closer for Racing, but not entirely close. It's like...
They've just done that to spite La Rochelle.
Yeah.
We're going to go... Yeah. You're going to have to go past Paris to get to the game.
Massive, you have to drive through Paris. There's almost no other way to get there without taking a massive detour. You'd also go through Epernay, Champagne region.
Mm.
Not far from there.
Lovely.
Mm.
We can talk about the Challenge Cup, I think. There were some good games.
I didn't see any. Oh, I saw the end of Wasps, actually, in fairness.
Oh, Wasp was maybe a good game.
Yeah, it was.
That was great.
Barbary scored late on.
It was back and forth. Edinburgh looked absolutely bereft at the end.
They were gutted. You could tell they were gutted. Bennett inches away from because they were 4 points down Edinburgh going into the final few minutes. So there's no room for kicks, no room for anything. Bennett did look absolutely devastated not to finish off his try. Happens. We'll get over it.
Did either of you see anything of the Gloucester Saracens game?
No.
Yeah, bits and bobs. Yeah.
Yeah. So bits. I watched about the opening half an hour.
It was disappointingly, put to bed.
Yeah.
By Saracens. Not disappointing for Saracens, but great for them. But
Saracens play Gloucester next game up in the Premiership too.
Mm.
Yeah, but now Gloucester have a rest week and Saracens have a trip to Med.
To Torn.
I don't think that this bothers Saracens. I think it would be more damaging for them not to progress in a European competition than it would be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they want. That's what they desire. They want to win everything. In fact, I'm starting to come to the conclusion they are going to win everything this season.
They're pretty ominous, aren't they?
Yeah. I can't quite think of the words now. Sort of like a revenge mission against the rest of the Premiership.
Against everyone.
Yeah. What an FU to everyone.
Yeah.
I quite want to see it.
I wouldn't mind seeing it as well. Just one interesting. So I watched about the first half an hour, 40 minutes of this game. One interesting thing, and a positive thing, a positive yellow card, if ever there is one.
Mm.
If either of you saw the Jamie George yellow,
nope.
So Jordy Reed goes absolutely full pelt at Jamie George. So Jordy Reed carrying the ball, Jamie George, shoulders to the head. Full force, because Jordy Reed is travelling at full speed. It looks bad initially. The initial replay looks really bad. And then the ref, and I can't remember who it was. Oh, this was Frank Murphy in this game. So he identifies that it is full pelt. It is contact to the head. However, Jamie George is actually backing away slightly. So, although it is full speed, the full speed is not as a consequence of Jamie George's actions, it's a consequence of Jordy Reed's actions, and therefore, in his mind, it is sufficient to downgrade, to give mitigation from full force red to yellow card, which I think was absolutely... And Jim Hamilton, who was on comms, made the point that 12 months ago, 18 months ago, that would have been cast iron red.
Yeah.
I think, and Jim thought, that the right decision was reached. It was the right outcome, which is, I think, a very positive thing overall.
Yeah.
The right direction of travel.
Can I just play devil's advocate on that a second, right?
Mm.
So, just so I understand the situation. So, Jamie George seeing this guy coming, he's like, oh, crikey. If I go forward here and smash him in the head, bad outcome for us, bad outcome for me, bad outcome for Saracens, right?
I'm not sure that was the thought process.
Okay, so is he just... let's just say it is. For the purposes of this.
Okay.
And then we can sort of... So he's stepping... Is he... Okay, I guess I'm trying to ask. Was he stepping back purposely to avoid damage to Jordy Reed's head?
No. Because if he's stepping back to avoid damage to Jordy Reed's head, why is he not just bending over? Taking his legs.
Yeah, I don't see why...
He didn't have time to think...
Yeah. What I'm saying,
it was just a passive tackle.
Say if you get caught a little bit off guard, you've got to make the tackle, right? And you either change your height, or you think, oh, crikey, I'll back off.
Yeah.
And then something bad happens. But he wasn't purposely backing off or changing anything. He was just going backwards because of...
I think he was going backwards because it was an unpredictable situation. Jody Reid was running full pelt, not necessarily at him, into a kind of a crowd of players, and then straightens up to Jamie George, so he's in a passive position.
So Jamie George did recognise the situation and took some level of evasive action, realising the potential danger he could have caused, so you've got to credit him for that one. And actually the framework is there, the force is one element that can be it has to be there for a red card, it has to be with force.
Yeah.
And actually there was no force. So
Well, this is the interesting thing, because there was force, but the force was as a consequence of Jordy Reed's actions, not as of Jamie George's actions. If Jamie George accelerates into that, it is horrific, because it's two players going at full speed.
So framework says, high tackle, was a force, yes, but not from Jamie George.
Yeah, so it's like two cars crashing, but one of them is going reversing at 10 miles an hour, the other one
on the wrong side of the road.
Into it at 70.
Exactly, it's the closing speed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, no, it was interesting.
Yeah,
it was positive direction.
Murphy.
Yes, very well handled. Good for Frank Murphy to get some praise in this podcast.
Yes. The things he actually did.
And the other game was London Irish.
Arundel.
Agonising.
Who is this boy?
Close.
He keeps coming off the bench and he keeps doing incredible things. He's been doing it for a few months now. He's not been playing for very long.
Why aren't they starting him yet? Come on.
He is.
Just imagine.
He's incredible. And this try was something else.
But they've got loads of incredible lads, haven't they?
So their back three is absolutely stacked. I think he might be the best of all of them.
Yeah, I'm inclined to go with you on that.
He's 19. He's got quads for days, and he is lightning. And the way that this try...
It was amazing.
It's absolutely amazing. The way he twice just stops and accelerates on two different players when he's taking the outside of them to create him, to buy himself enough time after he's already ran 80 yards at full pelt.
Yeah.
It was magical,
let's,
that try.
Let's hope that Bath aren't watching, because...
let's hope for everyone that Bath aren't watching. It's career, one way to ruin him.
The only thing positive will be his bank balance.
Short-term bank balance.
Everything else because he's an absolute disaster.
He's got to get. This is totally reactionary and ludicrous. But he has to get called up to England.
Get the kids in.
Why is he not playing?
I always say get the kids in.
It's so good.
He's got something very, very special.
He really does.
And I mean, I don't know. Well, hold on, Cockeslaw. Who do you drop?
All of them.
Anyone?
JB's
the whole team. They're just going to put
Bevan Rod out.
Yeah. Anyone.
genuinely, you've got to drop someone to get him in the England squad. Well, who are you dropping?
Johnny May's been in a lot of the recent England squads, and I've not seen him play for 2 years. So
one of the funniest things about the Arundel try, right, was a well-known member of Rugby Twitterati saw this and was like, oh my god, that's incredible. As most normal people would, I said, I really like watching London Irish play now. And then after a few minutes, must have thought, oh Christ, that means I'm...
What does that mean? Yeah. What have I just approved?
Retweets himself saying, this does not mean I agree with the ethics of some of the players. Like, of course it doesn't, you idiot. What's wrong with you? You probably still listen
You're allowed to just objectively enjoy the way a team play rugby.
I don't
without
like
it being
ethics.
a moral or ethical quandary.
Yeah,
I like rugby.
Tying themselves in knots. I can't get enough of it.
I'm so glad you've pointed out his quads as well, though, because it's not just that the guys are ridiculously rapid. You're right, he's stacked as well. Oh my god, I just watched it again. This guy's just
so good.
This guy's a freak. Get him in. Get the kids
in. Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm
made top four if they played.
I'm going to answer the question. I'd drop. If you had to drop
Watson.
Someone to get him in, I'd
get
drop.
Watson.
Radwan. Yeah. Or Hassel Collins.
Was Hassel Collins in? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Just draw out of a hat.
Yeah.
Oh, ridiculous.
Anyone, to be honest. Just get him in. Get the boy in. Henry Arundel.
Imagine being him.
Can't, can he? But I can imagine it after
a 95 meter try.
After my performance in North Dorset Vets Tens. Speaking of which,
what's the date for the North Dorset? It's 24th of July.
Oh, well done. I didn't know that.
Is it 24th of July?
I think it's
the 7th of July.
7th of July, is it?
I'll just check what Captain Lee said.
I'm going to need to find a way to... So apparently the Vets tournament's on the Friday. What time will that start?
I know.
Don't know. Well, we got down. What time did we get down? We got down about 7 o'clock last time.
Yeah.
After setting off early on the Friday, like 10 a.m. on the Friday.
Yeah, it was a long old drive, but we did stop for some awesome steaks at.
That's a fair. And a couple of beers at James Abraham's house.
Okay. All right. Fine. But this is like the time. Again, I've said it before on the podcast, but the time I've never seen the hacker these boys have in Chicago. Went all the way to Italy. We went to Rome. We nearly missed our flight from Marseille to get to Rome. Managed to get there, and then because we arrived on the Saturday morning, Italy are playing New Zealand, and I missed the hacker because these boys wanted to get a nice bit of pasta.
Absolutely right,
and some very dry white wine.
Yeah.
Very to be fair, we did almost miss being pitch side for the hacker in Chicago because we were having pretty much beers.
Yeah, we did. We had a lot of pretty much beers. So if you want to join the sevens, we've got a sevens which is open age. If you're just a good sevens player,
so is the Vets sevens taken care of?
So we need Vets players.
The Friday. Yeah. That's on the Friday only, though.
Yeah,
on the Friday only.
The Friday evening. Otherwise, I'm assuming it's Friday evening.
Yeah, Friday evening, where I will wipe the floor with all the other veterans teams as I did last time. I don't want to talk about it too much, but that's exactly what happened. 10 tries,
and then Saturday we've got the social and the elite. sevens.
Yeah,
teams,
which again, I, teams. You know, ever since I won the North Dorset Sevens, I've never stopped winning. I just keep winning things. So if you want to be a winner, join the Egg Chasers Sevens or Tens. Contact Egg Chasers.
Oh, is there a Tens team as well? Tens team as well?
So yeah, the Vets is Tens.
Oh, the Vets is Tens.
Or certainly it was last year.
Oh, nice. Cool. Yeah, all right. Cool, good, that's good.
Yeah.
All right, contact eggchasers@gmail.com. We're taking applications for Vets, which is over 35.
Yep.
8th and 9th of July it is.
Social.
Is that what you thought it was, Phil?
Yes, it is what I thought it was, because I'm in North Yorkshire.
And then what is it? There's nothing on the Sunday, it's just Friday, Saturday.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday,
Saturday
hangover.
Night, hangover, and meekly make your way home.
Yeah, fold up your tent, or yeah, burn it, or whatever you do.
Burn it, throw it in a river.
Whatever
there,
you do.
There's loads of nice streams and rivers around there, just throw it all in there.
Feeling
empty beer cans a lot.
Getting that paranoia you get when the flashing images of the night before start to come creeping back.
Yeah, and we might be playing another tournament as well. So if you just want to be on the register of Egg Chasers team members, just give us a text. We'll forward you on to Captain Lee, and you can join the ranks of our esteemed team.
We need to get one up this neck of the woods.
Llandudno.
When's the Llandudno? Coastal Sevens.
Great question. I've been asked to enter a team, and I intend to do that.
Come on, Phil. Look it up.
I'm not even sure they've publicised it that well.
Is it Beach Sevens?
No, I'm not playing on a beach. It'll not doing that.
Google Llandudno Sevens and some bars. Club 147.
147, great place. Been there many, many times.
It doesn't really give me much. Seven-bedroom seafront house, Llandudno.
Well, we'll get back to that one. But yeah, there is something going on around there. But I think we should do a second one as well. I'd want to do one overseas, but that's
we should
a lot
do our own. We should have our own sevens tournament. Why can't we, like, did we talk eight? Why can't we have the Egg Chasers Invitational? Well, not even Invitational. Egg Chasers next year, maybe. Egg
next
Chasers
year.
Sevens.
It's a bit late in the day to organise it for this
Egg
year.
Egg Chasers Sevens at Toc H.
I mean, you're looking at me like, can I do that?
Or of course
Park.
You can.
Or Broughton Park. We'll do it at Broughton Park. Park.
Why would you do it there?
Because it's a fantastic setup.
What, so you can hang out in the airport lounge? No thanks. No, it'd have to be Toc H. hey, so we're watching the semi-finals next week, me and Phil, in Madrid. Which is going to be fun.
We are. Sadly, no other rugby in Madrid. Because I'd love to go back to watch
it. I might be watching it in Toulon. Yeah. I don't know. I might be watching it in Lyon.
You can just drive over that afterwards. Yeah. You're over that neck of the woods.
Yeah, right.
Now, before we continue, why doesn't Phil look up what's happened in Welsh Rugby Union this last week? Do you know anything about this story?
I read a bit of the extracts from the report, which was by Oakwell?
Oakwell, yeah.
Yeah, which included Matt Tate.
Yes, I was going to say, Matt Tate works there now.
Yeah, I went through some of their staff. They got little profiles on a load of their staff. And he's done sports director at
Salford.
Master's or degree, yeah.
Yeah. So he's done that, as has Ed Slater.
Now, I've not read the full report at all. I've just read the bits, the extracts that were scandalous enough to get printed in newspapers and various websites, which includes recommendation from the report to that Wales, to improve their overall performance, might need to drop a team.
Yeah, I mean, it's very sad. It is all very sad. I think this is just, this is what happens when things get beyond repair and you kind of keep covering it up and patching it up. And you know, I think that's where Welsh rugby is going now. You will know that I have been, in the past, a fervent Welsh rugby fan.
You were, at a point in time, a very big Welsh rugby fan.
I could not care less now. And I believe there are many, many people like me. But there again, what did you expect? You know, look at what the WRU have been up to over the last few years. It's been ridiculous. So, you know, they're handing out contracts to players from England to come over to Wales, which are slightly less than the player can afford, but slightly too much compared to what the WRU can afford. They're not developing players properly. The internal nature of Welsh rugby means that they don't really care about anyone else other than a small section of South Wales. You just need to see what RGC go through to understand that there's just not really much connection between the north and the south. And then you've got just the preposterous nature of how the how the regions handle themselves, the, you know, the strength of the teams that they put out, the URC, and then you just look at, you know, if the answer is going to be somewhere like the Dragons and people like David Buttress setting up 32 different functions for the Dragons, including, you know, veterans photography classes and dog walking, circus courses. You know, what did they expect? You know, win some games. So your only job is to win some games, and he's currently supporting the current thing. The whole thing is a complete and utter mess. I actually think they should bin this Oakwell report. In fact, I think they should bin the whole of the rugby system in Wales. Just look at how the Premiership's been treated this year, where teams don't even have to fulfil fixtures, and there's
Welsh Premiership.
Welsh Premiership. Teams don't have to fulfil fixtures. I've got some friends over in Llandudno. They might not be able to compete to their full potential this year because there's no threat of any sanctions against other teams that don't fulfil their fixtures. It's the whole thing's a mess. So bin the Oakwell report to start with, and let's just hope the whole thing comes crashing down. Just burn it, shred the record, salt the earth, and start again, because I'm not sure if Welsh rugby will ever be as good as what it has been, but it certainly won't be as bad as it is now. So I think I would just go just scrap it all. I mean, one more thing. WRU, your only job is to like host entertainment, right? And yet they've been up to so much nonsense. Like, you know, you can't go around saying our fans are such drunken, disorderly idiots. We're going to water down the beer and close the bars. I mean, what kind of message is that? And we see this throughout all of rugby. At the moment, and this is one of my chief bugbears, you go into a rugby club now, and there's a little poster on the wall. It either says how you should behave, or worse still, it's how you play short numbers rugby in case not enough lads show up. Because the expectations on the players and the fans and the rugby community is so low, and they treat us with such disdain with these stupid posters and stupid bar rules at the main stadium and everything else. It's no wonder that people are sort of, you know, wandering away. There was one other thing I wanted to say about the WRU, but if it does come back to me...
Well, just one thing. So the proposal of potentially dropping from 4 to 3 in order to reduce the amount of money they need to spend to and also keep the quality high seems a bit short-sighted.
Yeah.
Compared to the alternative that we have proposed many times before, and JB, I think you were the first person to propose this loudly, which is let a lot of your best players go.
Yes.
Like, let them go. There'll be young lads, exactly to the point that you made before with Munster. Young lads will come through and you'll have the quality, and you'll have players taking other people's positions in France and in England. And you'll get a much broader experience. Now, that it's not all positive, that strategy, as I've pointed out many times, because those players who are playing, like Dan Bigger, and all the players who played in France over the years, wouldn't be available for the full pre-match camp, and they'd be forced to go back in Six Nations rest weekends and play in the meat grinder of the top 14 or the Premiership. But it's a trade-off worth making.
Agreed.
In order to get...
Completely agree.
You have more players coming through, and you pay on average less for the players that you are paying for.
Yeah,
it seems to make so much sense for a scenario for Wales, who are not Ireland and they're not New Zealand. They don't have as much money. They don't have the quality of players coming through, and the depth of players coming through. But they still have a lot of talent coming through because it is a rugby nation.
It's interesting when you look at Scotland. They've got Glasgow and Edinburgh, by far and away the two biggest conurbations in that country, and they can have enough of a pull in and of themselves. There'll be other parts of, you know, the Borders was an old area of Scotland which has kind of been left to one side, and somewhere they can develop.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Ireland have got, obviously, lots of different clubs and history, going back 150 years and stuff, but the provinces kind of break themselves up. They're a focal point for those areas. Wales is an odd one, because with the regions, they actually lost... There was no momentum that carried through from the 150 years of history, and for a lot of Welsh fans, it just they were instantly apathetic.
You know, there are so many parallels, aren't there, between Welsh Rugby Union and North West Rugby League? Loads and loads of talent in a very concentrated area, which doesn't really lend itself to being spread out across the country. So, you know, try taking rugby league to London.
Imagine having one rugby league or two rugby league teams, one towards Liverpool, one towards Manchester, and you suddenly went, "Oh yeah, St Helens and Wigan, you're kind of part of the same club now." No, absolutely not.
But you know, these are the decisions. I mean, I don't envy their decisions. They had a really tough job, but they just had really poor quality people deciding what to do. And you know, they've got a few other issues as well. So you know, in the long term, they've got the most garbage press. So, like the Welsh rugby press. If you read anything from the cheerleaders on the Wales Online, I have criticisms of other journalists as well. Just don't ask any tough questions. You know, they're just like cheerleaders. They are a pathetic bunch. So, you know, as the organ which is meant to keep the WRU accountable, they're dreadful. They're absolutely dreadful.
Well, it sounds like a bit of a snake pit on the inside.
Like the whole thing's. And on the short-term consequences, and this is a tiny bit controversial, even by comparison to what I've said previously, I have no problem with the WRU being very, very close to the Labour Party. This has always been the thing. No problem with it at all. Rugby League has probably got the same sort of connections. In fact, I think Andy Burnham was president of the Rugby League.
Shortly before...
Tony Adams.
Yeah. And
Claire Balding.
Claire Balding, yeah. Not Sue Barker.
I have
Claire
no problem
Balding.
With that. I think that is just a reality of life. Organisations may associate with whoever they want. What I do have a problem with, though, is the way that when COVID was ripping Wales to pieces, and I say Wales, Welsh rugby in particular, the WRU weren't there to stand up for Welsh rugby. They were there to run, basically, political interference and cover for the rules instituted from Cardiff. Instead of playing hell about the fact that the players in North Wales and South Wales couldn't play the same laws and rules that were happening in England, they just went along with it, just nodded their heads. There was no sort of fight back. And I think, you know, when you make those decisions that, you know, you'd rather run cover for somebody rather than fight for the actual people that pay your wages and, you know, the clubs that are part of your union, then you kind of deserve whatever you get. I have the same criticism of the RFU, by the way.
I was going to say, I think rugby as a whole...
It wasn't good enough to say, we phoned the Department of Culture every week, like, and they told us the rules.
Yeah, I mean, but
lobby.
Like, someone came out, I can't remember who it was, came out towards the start and said rugby's going to be the first sport back playing, and we're actually the last.
Yeah.
And and I think part of it was because they were just hoping for handouts and being...
Do you know, that's a great point. I never thought of
waiting
that.
Waiting for the cash.
I never thought of that, because if you were really, you know, cantankerous, said, no, boys, just go, you know, look after yourselves, look after your teammates, go and play rugby, you probably would be at risk of not having a lot of government cash. So I've never thought of that angle, actually. But that is the job of the union, both the Welsh and the English one, at the time, was not to say, yes, oh, thank you for giving us these laws. It was to lobby and make the case for why the lads should be out there, and girls. So, yeah, there was a lot of reasons that I really dislike the WRU, and I think I've outlined them all.
Very, very comprehensively, and I'm sure we'll revisit that again. Right, that's good. I think we've wrapped it up. The fixtures for the next weekend, we've kind of talked about them, but what have you actually, we've got times and everything for the games.
Yeah, we did have, yeah, so the...
is there any on Friday? They're both, there's two Saturday, two Sunday, is that right? Or three on Saturday?
I've not got the Challenge Cup.
I think it's three Saturday, one Sunday. Both the Champions Cup semi-finals are three, I think it's like 3 p.m. and 5:30 p.m. on the Saturday, I think.
Yeah, the Heineken Cup ones.
And I think the Challenge Cup, I think it's... in fact, it's Lyon versus...
I've got it here in
Lyon
front of me.
Versus Wasps, 1:30 p.m. on Saturday.
Yes, 1:30.
And then... Oh, no, they might all be on the same day. And then the Toulon... Saracens is the last game at like 9 p.m.
According to this, it's 9 o'clock on the Saturday night. Now that might be French time.
That's French time.
Yeah. So the 1 o'clock might be a 12:30 kickoff then on the Saturday.
Yeah.
Lyon Wasps. Let's just say 12:30 on Saturday.
12:30 UK time. 2:30 the first game. Or 3 p.m. Sorry, is the
3 p.m. is Leinster versus Toulouse.
Yeah.
On the Saturday, and then the Sunday it's 4 o'clock. Is the Sunday game, which is Racing against La Rochelle.
Okay. So there's a gap after...
La Rochelle.
There's a gap after Leinster to the late kickoff.
There's a big gap, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Jimmy, I'm not sure we'll be watching that late kickoff in Madrid at 9 o'clock.
We'll make it.
But that'll be...
That'll
be a lovely couple of hours for me to stroll around Toulon Harbour if I'm there.
Beautiful.
I don't know if you heard, Phil, but the Continentals got very late.
Very late.
Very late. I mean, you know, they'll probably be asleep, but by the
way, just waking up.
4 a.m. is when
they start getting ready at 4 a.m.
Yeah. Well, would you like to know why I've got very expensive white trousers? Actually.
Wait, tell us on the Patreon pod.
Yeah, I'll tell
them. Okay.
Right, we'll do that. Yeah. Well, cause, yeah.
I do, because someone messaged me about white trousers. But
oh no! Go on. We'll
do it on the Patreon.
Is it quick?
It'd be worth.
No, it's not quick.
It'd be worth
it's
your.
It's relatively funny.
It'd be worth you £3.
All right.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/eggchasers. Subscribe. Give us a 5-star review. Email contact eggchasers@gmail.com. Let the boys play.
Okay.